Wednesdays at 2 p.m. here on WBAI New York. Stay tuned now for the Katie Halpin Show coming up. It is 3 p.m. and this is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. Here we go.
Welcome to the Katie Halper Show. I'm your host, Katie Halper. You can hear the Katie Halper Show every Wednesday at 3 p.m. on WBAI. That's 99.5 FM or WBAI.org. As you know, WBAI Radio is listener sponsored, and your contributions keep community voices alive. During our winter fun drive, we need your help more than ever. You can donate now at buddy.wbai.org or call 1-833-WBAI-NYC. That's 1-833-922-4692. If no one answers, leave a voicemail with your name and number for a callback. You can also mail a check or money order to 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, 11217. Today, I'm speaking with Yaakov Shapiro, an international speaker, author, and pulpit rabbi for over 30 years, now emeritus. He's the author of The Empty Wagon, Zionism's Journey from Identity Crisis to Identity Theft. This interview was recorded December 30th, 2025.
Hi, Katie. How are you? Thanks so much for having me back.
Of course. Thanks for joining. It's always a great time talking to you. You're such an expert in this and very learned, obviously. And do you say how are the holidays, or do you say how is your Hanukkah?
Either is okay.
Either, okay. How was your Hanukkah?
Hanukkah was great.
You know, we were talking about this backstage, that something you pointed out that I never really realized is that Zionism has managed to conquer Hanukkah, at least commercially, right? Can you explain that?
Yeah. If you go into a department store during the holiday season in December, let's say you go into Macy's, so you'll see the Christmas display and the Hanukkah display. The Christmas display invariably has a color pattern. It's green and red and gold. The green and red, that's the holly and the berries. The Hanukkah displays, the Hanukkah decorations are almost invariably blue and white. Now, Hanukkah has to do with the lighting of a menorah. That would be gold, fire, red, orange, whatever. What does blue and white have to do with Hanukkah? The answer is nothing. Blue and white was designed to be the Hanukkah decorations because they are the colors of the Israeli flag. That's it. No more, no less. And Hanukkah is a holiday that the Zionists hijacked, and they like it better than all the other holidays for two reasons. The first reason is that Hanukkah is the only major Jewish holiday that's not in the Bible. We're talking about celebratory holidays as opposed to the day, let's say, the temple was destroyed, the second temple. It's not in the Bible. Purim is in the Bible. Passover is in the Bible. Sukkot is in the Bible. Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are in the Bible. And we have a tradition as to what the holiday means. We know that they had one flask of oil which lasted 8 days. That's why we have 8 days of Hanukkah. The Zionists changed that because aside from the oil, there was also a war that the Jews fought, but it really wasn't a war. The Syrian Greeks had taken over the land, and they made decrees against the Jews that they can't be religious. Now, here's the rule. Jews would not take up arms against their oppressors if their oppression is just physical and material oppression. We would try to make peace, negotiate. That's one of the things that the Zionists hated about the Jews. They wanted to be tough men. The only time Jews would take up arms against their enemies is when God is attacked. It's not really the Jews. Not one Jew was in danger because of these decrees. All he had to do was give up his religion and he would be safe. The threat to kill Jews that remains Jewish was a deterrent. They didn't want the Jews killed. They wanted the Jews to give up the Judaism. So they decided to martyr themselves. The Jews, who didn't really have a decent army to speak of, they took up arms against the Syrian Greeks with having in mind to die rather than give up their religion. But God made a miracle, and rather than die, they won the war. And after they won the war, they had conquered back the temple. Then they went into the temple and they only found one flask of oil because of the vandalism that the Greeks did there. And that oil lasted 8 days. But the Talmud says that the holiday has nothing to do with the victory in the war. There are many reasons given for that. One of the reasons is that, well, we weren't interested in winning the war. They wanted a martyr. They wanted to die. They were giving their lives. But there are various reasons. But for whatever reason, the holiday of Hanukkah, according to the Talmud, is only because of the flask. The Zionists flip this on its head. Not only do they emphasize the miracle of the victory in the war, they don't believe that it was many fell at the hands of the few, as we say in our prayers, the strong fell at the hands of the weak. They celebrate Jewish strength and Jewish battle and Jewish army. And not only that, but they claim that the war was fought for national self-determination. Worse yet, there was a song, it's a pity, it's on YouTube, you can get it. There's a song that was made, a Hanukkah song. You know they have Hanukkah songs, right? So the
Dreidel, Dreidel, that one. Oh, Hanukkah, Hanukkah.
Well, that's some. Now, the education officer in the IDF once made he composed a Hanukkah song. And the chorus, the first two lines go, Nes lo karal lanu pach shemen lo matzanu. There was no miracle of the oil. No, we did not find any flask of oil. The whole thing was our strength and our power, power of the Jews, who went and beat their enemies. And they said that the entire Hanukkah story, as it is celebrated, is a myth that the rabbis made. And they actually go around singing this.
How can I find the song? Is there a way I can search for it? Like, what would I Google?
Well, if you have a Hebrew keyboard, you would Google.
Just disconnected it.
Oh, I could bring it up for you if you want. While we're talking, I could send you a link.
Yeah. Can you just remind people what we're about to see? This is a Hanukkah song.
Composed by the education officer of the IDF. This is in the olden days. And it says, it's that one right there, the middle one. It's called Anuno Tin Lapidim, We Carry Torches. Keep going if you want. You gotta wait for the chorus.
Okay.
Neslo karalanu, no miracle happened to us. Pach shemen lo matzanu, we never found a flask of oil. We went down into the valley. We went up to the mountain. We revealed light, whatever, and then there was light. They take biblical verses and they corrupt them. This is Zionism. That's the difference between Zionism and Judaism.
You're listening to The Katie Halper Show. I'm your host, Katie Halper. You can hear The Katie Halper Show every Wednesday at 3 p.m. on WBAI. That's 99.5 FM or WBAI.org. As you know, WBAI Radio is listener-sponsored, and your contributions keep community voices alive. During our winter fun drive, we need your help more than ever. You can donate now at buddy.wbai.org or call 1-833-WBAI-NYC. That's 1-833-922-4692. If no one answers, leave a voicemail with your name and number for a callback. You can also mail a check or money order to 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, 11217. Today, I'm speaking with Yaakov Shapiro, an international speaker, author, and pulpit rabbi for over 30 years, now emeritus. He's the author of The Empty Wagon, Zionism's Journey from Identity Crisis to Identity Theft. This interview was recorded December 30th, 2025. You know, the difference between Zionism and Judaism, more and more people, including Jews, although not religious Jews, obviously. That's not true. Religious Jewish Zionists will argue that Zionism and Judaism are connected. Anti-Zionists who are secular will argue that religious Judaism and Zionism are connected.
Really?
Oh, I've heard, yeah. Have you not heard this argument? Okay, there are anti-Semites who argue that Judaism and Zionism is connected, yes. Obviously. Yeah. But there are anti-Zionist Jews who say, I studied this, that, the other in Hebrew school. I've read this, that, the other. And, or, you know, the chosen people narrative, right? You hear that quite a bit. So I wanted you to react, to respond to that. Talk about what the Talmud actually is. And then we're going to get into a discussion that's more focused on the Talmud. During the second half, we're going to be watching a Candace Owens clip and we're going to be bringing on Sam Biagetti. But just for dividing up the discussion, I think in a logical way, if you could talk about what the Talmud is, and if you could explain the religious Jewish opposition to Zionism, such that it exists.
Okay. So first, the idea that the way you describe the religious Jews saying that Judaism has to do with Zionism, it sounds like they were taught that in their Jewish day schools. And right.
I'm talking about religious people who are both religious and Zionist. Yeah.
Right. So they were taught that in their schools. We need to understand that it's not only Judaism. Christianity has the same divide. You have the evangelicals who are very Zionist. And if you were to go to the Pope or the Catholic Church and say, well, how do you explain the Zionism in Christianity? They would tell you, excuse me, that's Protestants. Those are Protestants. Those are evangelicals. Those dispensationalists. We're Catholic. We don't believe in that. We don't even think that they're full-fledged Catholics. Protestantism violates Christianity. We don't even believe. It's like almost two different religions. The Jews have the same thing. That and the distance, though, between Jewish anti-Zionists versus the Jewish Zionists is greater than the distance between the Catholic Church and the evangelicals. We believe that Zionism is simple idol worship or heresy. Technically, they're two separate things, and it's both, if you really want to know. The Jewish opposition, and of course, it depends all on your interpretation. It used to be back in the olden days, in the days of Jesus, Christianity was an interpretation of Judaism. And there are Christians that'll tell you the same thing, that Jesus is in the Jewish Bible. And if I don't believe in Jesus, I'm not a good Jew, right? By the same token, there are Zionists that'll tell you, if I don't believe in Zionism, I'm not a good Jew. And all I need to establish over here, I don't need to go into the nitty-gritty regarding the interpretation of the verses and the religion. All we need to establish here is that we could all agree that they're two different religions. Just because there are many Jews who are Zionists, there are, they doesn't mean that that's Judaism, in the same way that just because there are many Christians who are Zionists doesn't mean that that's Christianity. I'm not saying who's right in terms of Christianity. I don't know much about Christianity. But I do know that they are two different religions for all practical purposes. All you need to know here is that I don't think your viewers are interested in a scholarly debate regarding the interpretation of the Talmud regarding Zionism. But we do want to know that they are two different religions. It's very simple. Now, the reason for the opposition to Zionism, well, it's many. First, Zionism at its core is a redefining of what a Jew is. Before Zionism, and Bolshevism also did kind of almost the same thing, before Zionism, everybody agreed Judaism was a religion. Even the break-off sects, there's Reform Judaism that's far from orthodoxy, but they agree it's a religion. Just they have a different interpretation of the religion. Conservative Judaism, it's a religion, but this is their interpretation. Even Christianity, it's a religion, but this is their interpretation. Okay? Jews for Jesus, it's a religion. The olden days, the Tzedukim, the Baisusim, all these break-off sects, Karoyim, everybody agreed. Came the Zionists and said, no, it's not a religion. Right. Judaism is a nationality. Judaism does not belong in the set of, let's say, Christianity, Islam, Hinduism, Judaism. It belongs in the set of Spanish, French, Russian Jews. Okay. Now, how they make it into a nationality, that's a problem because there are two problems. Problem number one, Jews had no national characteristics. We had no common land, language, or culture, but that didn't deter the Zionists because they actually synthesized them. They created a language that's modern Hebrew, and they actually beat up Jews that were speaking Yiddish. The Ashkenazi Jews spoke Yiddish. There were Jews in Spain that spoke another language, Ladino.
Right.
And the Arab Jews, I have friends in Brooklyn, Syrian Jews, they speak Arabic, or at least their grandparents did, the guys my age. But the Zionists created a national language for the Jewish people because language is one of the, perhaps the most important binding factor of a people. So they created modern Hebrew. The Jews never had a flag. We had 12 tribes. Each tribe actually had a flag. It had a symbol. They had a culture, a lifestyle separate, but there was nothing, no flag that united the Jews. We had no flag. The Zionists invented a flag for the Jews. We had no national anthem. We had no culture. We still don't. The Jewish Ashkenazi culture, or like where you live, the Upper West Side or Upper East Side, secular Jewish culture is an animal within itself, you know? Right. Compared to the Yemenite Jewish culture, it's like there's nothing in common. The Zionists created what they want, a Jewish culture. Israeli culture is Jewish culture. Israeli music is sold in stores under Jewish music. Okay, Jewish food, hummus became Jewish food. Don't ask me why, how. Whatever is a Middle Eastern, they created Middle Eastern names, and they wanted to change the entire Jewish religion into a people, meaning a nationality. Jabotinsky, one of the founding fathers of Zionism, whose more fascist-leaning Zionism is the dominant one in Israel today, Netanyahu considers himself a student of Jabotinsky. Netanyahu's father was an actual very close student of Jabotinsky and editor of his magazine. Jabotinsky believed the Jews are a race. Other Zionists did too. Theodore.
And anti-Semites believe this too, yeah, right?
The Zionists and the anti-Semites love each other put it this way, you don't see anti-Semites running around saying, Look what Yaakov Shapiro says. Jews are a religion. See how bad the Jews are. You don't see that. You don't see the anti-Semites running around showcasing the anti-Zionist Jews and saying, look what the Jews are doing. Instead, you see them showcasing the idea that the Jews are a people, that the Zionists, that the Jews own the Israel, that the Jews are, in fact, Adolf Hitler actually said this, Mein Kampf chapter 2. This is where they got it from. And I'll explain a lot of the anti-Semitism that you see today in reaction to Israel is actually old Nazi propaganda. So Adolf Hitler in Mein Kampf chapter 2, it's called something like My Life and Studies in Vienna. There he says like this, that the greatest lie that these Jews have is they say that they're just a religion. They're regular Germans, just of a different religion, which is the truth. I'm an American as much as anybody else. I just have a different religion. He said, Hitler, that's a lie. They're really a completely different people. And any doubt I ever had about this, I may have had, was alleviated by the group called the Zionists. Because the Zionists are Jewish nationalists, and they'll tell you the Jews are a nation. Israel, there was no Israel there, but now they'll tell you Israel is the state of that nation. And Adolf Hitler actually used this to say, well, Jews, you don't belong in Germany. You belong out of Germany because you're not real Germans. And in fact, we knew that the Zionists were going to create this anti-Semitic trope, or solidify it, or encourage it, rather. They didn't create it. In 1917, when the Balfour Declaration was declared, there was one Jewish member of the British cabinet. His name was Edwin Montagu. And he was against the Balfour Declaration because he said that if you speak in terms of a national homeland to the Jewish people, you are making the Jews foreigners in their own nations. And aside from the anti-Semitism that Zionism generates and encourages, Because again, the anti-Semites are not running around retweeting posts of Yaakov Shapiro. They're running around retweeting posts of Netanyahu and of the Zionists and saying, look what the Zionists do. Any Jew that hangs up an Israeli flag to show that he's Jewish, it's like putting up a target on his house, you know? And if they put it up in the neighborhood, it's like putting a target on the neighborhood. But Zionists, they are so messed up in the head. Number one, they don't realize it. Number two, they don't care.
You're listening to The Katie Halper Show. I'm your host, Katie Halper. You can hear The Katie Halper Show every Wednesday at 3 p.m. on WBAI. That's 99.5 FM or WBAI.org. Today, I'm speaking with Yaakov Shapiro, an international speaker, author, and pulpit rabbi for over 30 years, now emeritus. He's the author of The Empty Wagon, Zionism's Journey from Identity Crisis to Identity Theft. This interview was recorded December 30th, 2025. As you know, WBAI Radio is listener-sponsored, and your contributions keep community voices alive. During our winter fun drive, we need your help more than ever. You can donate now at buddy.wbai.org or call 1-833-WBAI-NYC. That's 1-833-922-4692. If no one answers, leave a voicemail with your name and number for a callback. You can also mail a check or money order to 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, 11217. When you support WBAI, you support shows like The Katie Halper Show, which brings you voices you often can't hear in corporate media. And shows like these and voices like these are more important than ever, given the brutal crackdown on free speech. This interview today is a perfect example of what's at stake, but it's not the only example of it. For instance, we at The Katie Halper Show have interviewed people like Ali Abu Nima, the Palestinian-American journalist, the founder and publisher of the excellent outlet, Electronic Intifada. Not only has Electronic Intifada done essential reporting on Gaza, but Ali Abu Nima himself was arrested in Zurich, Switzerland last month. He was set to give a speech there, but was instead detained for 3 days, released, and deported. And his crime was being a journalist from Palestine, covering the genocide in Gaza. And The Katie Halper Show is extremely proud to have voices like Ali Abu Nima's on our show. We also make sure that we bring you voices of people like Susan Sarandon, Michael Moore, and Wallace Shawn, who are not journalists, but are filmmakers, actors, essayists, and playwrights, using their voice and their celebrity to speak out and do the right thing. And they also have paid the price. And that's why, in addition to being just fascinating guests, we are so committed to highlighting voices like theirs. We also bring you voices like Susan Abulhawa, the Palestinian-American novelist who wrote the award-winning bestseller Mornings in Jenin. And we also interview people like Gabor Mate, the award-winning best-selling author, trauma and addiction expert, and also a Holocaust survivor himself, who is very committed to exposing Israel's crimes against humanity and advocating for the rights of Palestinians. Other voices we bring you at The Katie Halper Show are the voices of Ukrainian-American journalist Lev Galinkin. Voices like his really are not allowed in corporate media because they don't echo the pro-war agenda that corporate media is so committed to. You can also hear voices like Max Blumenthal or Vijay Prashad, the wonderful historian and journalist Vijay Prashad. We've also interviewed people like Noam Chomsky. And of course, we interview people like Gerald Horn, the wonderful heterodox historian. And speaking of criminalized voices, we're very proud to have had on the show Omali Ishatela of the Uhuru 3, the African socialist leader who was actually charged for his opinions and his speech and almost convicted. Luckily, he wasn't, but it came really close. We also bring you voices of people like Chris Hedges, Dennis Kucinich, Chesa Boudin, Nora Ericott, Medea Benjamin, Thomas Frank, anti-war veterans like Matthew Ho, anti-war veterans like Greg Stoker. We bring you the voices of people like Athir Yacoub, a Palestinian-American comedian. I've also interviewed people like Jill Stein, Cornel West, so that we bring you the voices of people who are running outside of the duopoly. I'm really proud to have interviewed Rashid Khalidi, the inimitable Palestinian-American historian, the author of The Hundred Years War on Palestine. And I'm really proud to have brought you the voice of Rania Kalik, who does wonderful reporting from Beirut, Lebanon. We've also brought you people like Jordan Sheridan, who does award-winning, much-needed reporting on Flint, Michigan and the water poisoning. So please do make sure that you donate to WBAI. Make sure you become BAI buddies. And you can do that by going to buddy.wbai.org or by calling 1-833-WBAI-NYC. That's 1-833-922-4692. If no one answers, leave a voicemail with your name and number for a callback. You can also mail a check or money order to 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, 11217. We provide you with such important coverage. We interview people like David Sirota of The Lever, who does wonderful independent journalism exposing the corruption of both parties. We bring you voices like Lily Greenberg Hall, who resigned from the State Department over its handling of the Gaza genocide. We also interviewed Harrison Mann, who also resigned from the US military over the Gaza genocide. And we're committed to bring you voices of doctors who have practiced and saved lives and helped people in Gaza, which is why we interview people like Dr. Thayer Ahmed and Dr. Ben Thompson. We make sure that we bring you voices of people who have been canceled and censored, like Mora Finkelstein. She is the first Jewish tenured professor to be fired over Palestine activism. We bring you voices of people like John Kiriakou, who is a CIA whistleblower. He's literally the only person to have gone to prison over the CIA torture program. He didn't participate in the torture. He blew the whistle on it. But because we live in a world where speech is criminalized, the only person to get in trouble over the CIA's torture program was the person who exposed it. And that's why we bring you voices like John Kiriakou's. We bring you voices like John Mearsheimer, who is someone who is an extremely well-respected analyst, except he now is not allowed on corporate television because his views are heterodox and they do not go well with the corporate media's pro-war agenda. And speaking of crackdowns on free speech, we're very proud to have had on our show people like Iris Heifetz, the Israeli, German, Jewish psychoanalyst who was arrested for speaking out on Palestine. We're also very proud to have had on the show Adam Broomberg, the award-winning photographer and artist based in Berlin, who's from South Africa, who himself was arrested for protesting for Palestine rights. He was canceled as an anti-Semitic artist, even though he himself is Jewish, and he was canceled by Germany. The irony is too rich. It's almost too rich to be believed. And speaking of guests who don't exist within the duopoly, we've had on not only Jill Stein and Cornel West, but Claudia de la Cruz. We've had on Stephen Donziger, someone who was imprisoned, persecuted, and prosecuted just for literally defending the people in the Amazon. His crime was successfully suing Chevron for poisoning the Amazon. And for that, he was imprisoned. And we are so happy to have people like him on the show. We've had on people like Lara Sheehy, who they tried to cancel, Lebanese-American professor, they tried to cancel. Luckily, they were unable to, but they did try to get her fired, and she was investigated by a third party. We also bring you voices like Anne Wright, who resigned from the State Department. She's a retired colonel, and she's a critic of war and NATO and proxy wars. And the fact that she was a colonel makes her voice that much more powerful and her critique of war and militarism that much more important. And because we're so committed to raising voices that are silenced and vilified, we are so proud to have spoken to people like Roger Waters of Pink Floyd, who himself was almost canceled. Well, I should say he has been canceled, but they even tried to cancel one of his concerts. And we at the Katie Halper Show made sure to elevate his voice and the voices of other people who were defending him. We're very proud to have on anti-war veterans, as I said before, like Mike Prisner. And we bring you interviews with politicians, politicians who aren't afraid to say things that go against the grain. Politicians like Representative Ro Khanna, Cori Bush, Rashida Tlaib, Nina Turner. We bring you voices like Ray McGovern and John Kiriakou, who have both worked in the CIA, and they provide such an important perspective on these issues. And we speak to people like the legendary journalist Robert Scheer. But we also make sure we bring you some funny voices as well, like the voices of comedian Kate Willett, David Cross, Dave Anthony, and Gareth Reynolds, Judah Friedlander. We are so proud to interview people like Miko Peled, who is the son of a high-ranking Israeli general and a major voice for peace, ironically enough. Today, I'm speaking with Yaakov Shapiro, an international speaker, author, and pulpit rabbi for over 30 years, now emeritus. He's the author of The Empty Wagon, Zionism's Journey from Identity Crisis to Identity Theft. This interview was recorded December 30th, 2025. You've pointed this out, that Zionism and Zionists require anti-Semitism.
Yes. Now, one of the questions they asked the early Zionists was, well, what is a Jew if it's not a religion? Remember, there was no Israel then. So Theodor Herzl basically said, he said, a Jew is anybody the anti-Semite hate. Jean-Paul Sartre said that, but Herzl said it before Sartre did. And Zionists need anti-Semites in order to, first of all, find purpose in the world. And they need it really in order to define themselves, because you take a Jew, let's say a Jew lives in Manhattan, not religious, doesn't believe in the Jewish religion, but they are a Zionist. You ask them, what is a Jew? There really is no consistent answer. It can't be an ethnicity, because your ethnicity, Katie, and mine, and the Yemenite Jews, and the Ethiopian Jews, and the Syrian Jews are not the same. It's ridiculous. And never mind converts like Ivanka Trump's ethnicity and a Yemenite Jew's ethnicity are not the same. There is no answer except that a Jew is somebody who the Torah requires to fulfill 613 commandments. And I do want to mention something now that's confusing to people. Many of your viewers are probably thinking, well, if Judaism is a religion, how could you have not religious Jews? So I'm going to answer that. Judaism is different than many other religions, perhaps all religions. I'm not sure. But religions such as Christianity or Islam, according to those religion, there's one covenant that God expects the people of the earth to fulfill. According to Christianity, everyone should be a Christian, right? According to Islam, everyone should follow Muhammad. Now, I once mentioned this and some Muslim wrote in the comments, well, you don't have to be a Muslim. God will judge you, whatever it is. But there's one covenant. There's one set of, there's one correct religion, put it that way. And Muhammad is the prophet and Allah is God. In Judaism, that's not true. In Judaism, not everybody has to fulfill the same covenant. When Noah came out of the ark, God gave him a covenant, our tradition says, that had seven commandments. You can't kill, you can't steal, you have to be a law-abiding citizen, it doesn't have to be Jewish law, you can't tear limbs off live animals and eat them, seven basic civilizational laws, but they're laws given by God. About 800 years later, at Mount Sinai, Moses and the people that he led out of Egypt were given a different covenant. That's called the Torah. That had 613 commandments. All of humanity is obligated to fulfill the seven Noahide laws. And if you want, you can convert and become one who are obligated to fulfill the 613. other people are obligated to fulfill the 613. Those who are obligated to fulfill the 613 are called Jews, whether they are compliant or not. It's the obligation that gives you the name Jew when used in that context. So other religions don't need a word to distinguish between which covenant you are obligated to fulfill. Jews do. If somebody says, I believe in the Torah, I believe in God, I believe in Judaism, how do I serve God? So I'll ask him, well, if you are, according to the Torah, a Noahide, you're obligated to fulfill these seven commandments. If you are one of those people, a Jew, called a Jew, you're obligated to fulfill 613. It's very simple. Now, people can convert. So the Jews are not a people. We are united spiritually. There's all sorts of theology behind this. But in the simplest definition, a Jew is somebody who's obligated to fulfill the 613. So that's why in other religions, there is no word to describe the difference between covenant A and covenant B. A Muslim means somebody who follows Islam. If you're not religious, you're not a Muslim. If you don't follow Christianity, you're not a Christian. If you don't follow Judaism, that means you're a non-compliant Jew. If you are obligated to do, if you don't follow the Torah, the 613 commandments, and you're a Noahide, well, then you're could be a compliant Noahide because you're not Jewish.
Right.
Regarding Jews who are not religious, we actually have other words. There's other categories. We use tzaddik, rasha, a righteous person, a wicked person, a scholarly person, and the Muslims have a similar word. We have a word kofer, which means a denier, somebody who doesn't believe in the Torah.
Is that what I am?
I don't know. You can tell me if you believe that God gave the Torah on Mount Sinai and you believe in the 13 fundamentals of Jewish belief. If not, then you are. If you do believe it, then you're not. It's very simple. And a kofer is considered, Judaism is a meritocracy. A lot of things you'll see in the Talmud about Jews, they apply to religious Jews. Jews are not a people. Privilege that the Torah gives Jews only applies to religious Jews. And not only that, but I'm telling you as a rabbi that there are privileges given in this world and the next, but a average law-abiding Muslim who doesn't worship idols and they have a monotheistic religion, who doesn't worship idols, who doesn't kill, doesn't steal, law-abiding guy, doesn't commit adultery, he is closer to God than a godless heretic like Theodore Herzl or David Ben-Gurion or Benjamin Netanyahu. They don't believe in it. They are kofrim. I think the Muslim version of this word is kafir or something like that. But it's the same word. It's K-F-R. You know, it's just the vowels are different. You can go to Wikipedia and punch in KFR and you'll find under that root, the Jewish version and the Muslim version and the etymology of the words. And we have words called apikoiris, which means it comes from the word, it's the same word as Epicurean in English, but it comes from the Hebrew word hefker, meaning unbound. It means he doesn't consider himself obligated. These are various different words for people that don't believe in the Torah. And although they still retain the obligations of Jews, you cannot give up your obligation because just as in Christianity, you can't just give up you can't be saved unless you're a Christian, if you're a human being, right?
Right.
And in Judaism, if you are obligated to fulfill the Jewish covenant, the Torah, nothing you can do is going to deobligate you.
Okay.
And therefore, you could be considered a Jew in bad standing, or I heard the Mormons have a word for a Mormon that doesn't fulfill their obligations. I forgot it offhand. But a Jew in that sense only means that you are obligated to fulfill the Torah covenant, Moses, the Mosaic covenant, as opposed to the Noahide covenant. That's why you can have non-religious Jews. You have kofrim, you have apikorsim, you have wicked Jews who are reshoyim. Now, of course, we do distinguish between a Jew who knows nothing about Judaism, a baby, let's say, who was captured by non-Jews when he was a kid and brought up, he doesn't even know he's Jewish. So such a person is much less accountable for his sins than, because he doesn't even know he's Jewish, than somebody who is Jewish. And many people grow up ignorant of Judaism. They may even think that Zionism is Judaism.
Right.
Such ignorant people that were taught such things, you know, if they don't really have free will or a choice to be able, if they don't know what's going on, I mean, God judges people fairly, you know, everybody according to their level. So that's a non-religious Jew. So first thing about Zionism is it redefines what it is to be a Jew, which means it is an attack on Jewish identity. Now, the reason the Zionists did this is because they wanted to change the character of the Jews, the aspirations of the Jews, and the values of the Jews. The Jews were a overly peaceful people, and I say overly by general standards of civilization. The Talmud says the Jews are not allowed to wage war against other nations or other peoples, and I use the word nation in quotation marks because we're not really a nation. We're not allowed to wage wars. We're not allowed to...
The Talmud says this.
The Talmud says this, yes.
You're listening to The Katie Halper Show. I'm your host, Katie Halper. You can hear The Katie Halper Show every Wednesday at 3 p.m. on WBAI. That's 99.5 FM or WBAI.org. As you know, WBAI Radio is listener-sponsored, and your contributions keep community voices alive. During our winter fun drive, we need your help more than ever. You can donate now at buddy.wbai.org or call 1-833-WBAI-NYC. That's 1-833-922-4692. If no one answers, leave a voicemail with your name and number for a callback. You can also mail a check or money order to 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, 11217. Today, I'm speaking with Yaakov Shapiro, an international speaker, author, and pulpit rabbi for over 30 years, now emeritus. He's the author of The Empty Wagon, Zionism's Journey from Identity Crisis to Identity Theft. This interview was recorded December 30th, 2025. Can you explain what the Talmud is? Because not everyone knows that.
Okay, so if you look in the Bible, or what the Christians call the Old Testament, if there's a lot of things in there that really don't make sense or so totally ambiguous that it's just unintelligible. For example, it says that on a certain month and a certain day, it'll be a day of blowing for you. Yom Teruah Yelochem. You will blow. It's a big holiday, but it doesn't say what the holiday celebrates. Okay. It says regarding Passover that it comes out in the spring month. The problem is that the calendar that the Jews use and the Muslims, the lunar calendar, loses 11 days every year to the solar calendar, which means that one year Passover will come out in the spring, another eventually will come out in the winter. How does that make sense? There are words. The Torah says, the Bible says that you should put frontlets, toitophos, between your eyes, but it doesn't explain what the word is. There are so many things. It says on the holiday of Sukkot, you should take the fruit of the pretty, good-looking fruit of a tree, but it doesn't say what fruit we're talking about. So clearly, God explains more to Moses than what is in the text. Moses was there for 40 days and 40 nights. He certainly asked God, "Hello, God, what does this mean? What does this day celebrate?" Well, it celebrates Rosh Hashanah. How do you make these frontlets? So that's what we call tefillin. And there are like 10 laws that are required to make tefillin. And we know them because they're what we call Halacha L'Moshe MiSinai. God told Moses on Mount Sinai these laws, and they were handed down. There were other times where Moses asked God, okay, what's the law? And God told Moses, you know, like a teacher. A lot of times a teacher is going to teach a class, and then a couple of students are going to come and say, okay, we have a question. What about this case or that case? And the teacher will say, you know what? I gave you the tools to figure it out. You figure it out on your own. And a teacher, even if left to his own devices, would sometimes come out with a different conclusion. He will give the student credit if they came up with their own conclusion. So God gave Moses, also on Mount Sinai, methodology about how to interpret the Torah. There are various different ways that we have: juxtaposition of words, juxtaposition of verses, order of things. There are all sorts of different ways. Now, sometimes there are disagreements amongst the rabbis, which is fine, just like there are disagreements amongst doctors or lawyers. But over here, God said, I want you to follow the word of my law. And if the law is not clear here, I want you to follow the methodology. And whoever's better at it, and you can't have a vested interest. There are requirements for a person who's qualified. And there are requirements not only for the person who's qualified, there are very, very strict requirements about how to do this. And a combination of things that were handed down by Moses at Mount Sinai, a combination of debates amongst the rabbis, for the most part, revolving around the methodology that God gave Moses on Mount Sinai, how to interpret those, not just random interpretations. I have no right to interpret the law because the Talmud was closed. We used to have prophets who spoke to God. In Judaism, as generations go by, we get further and further away from that level of supernatural experience. So we don't have miracles today like they had. Nobody splits the Red Sea today. No prophets talk to God. And nobody is qualified to be a Talmudic sage anymore.
Okay, but it used to be, it is a commentary, right, on the Torah, the Talmud?
It's a commentary, but it's not just a commentary like Cliff's Notes. It's a commentary that follows it's debates, commentary, comments, episodes, lessons, many things. There was about seven generations. At first, there was the Mishnah. After the Mishnah, there was seven generations of Gemara in the Babylonian Talmud, where these things are discussed. But they're not just random discussions like the Congressional Record. They're all following the rules with divine inspiration, similar to prophecy, but technically not the same, by the people who are qualified doing what they're supposed to do according to the instructions that God gave Moses. I know that's complicated, but that's what it is.
Yeah. Okay, and we're gonna return to the content of the Talmud when we do that segment on Candace Owens soon. But I want to ask you about the opposition to the religious opposition to Zionism, because we were talking about this offline the other day, and how a lot of people say, either critically or not critically, a lot of anti-Zionists say, well, religious Jews oppose Israel because they think that it can't exist until the Messiah comes back.
Okay, so the Zionists want you to think that that is the only reason we oppose Israel, for two reasons. Number one, they want you to think that all Jews had the same aspirations. Returning home, the only question is when. We own Israel, the only question is when. They don't want you to know that they invented the entire thing. So they want you to think that. Secondly, they want to paint us as religious fanatics. All right, you know, the practical people, the people that are interested in saving Jewish lives, that's us. They have this religious thing that better, like, we should go to Auschwitz than have a state because of some messianic ideas. They want to paint their opponents as crazy religious fanatics, and they want to paint their ideology of Zionism as Judaism as a whole. The truth is that while it is true that it is prohibited in the Talmud, which derives it from verses in the Bible, it is prohibited for the Jews to leave their exile. There are different periods when God created, from the time God created the world until the Messiah, the periods of the prophets, periods of the patriarchs. We are now in the time period of exile. And God's cosmic plan for the world is that we must remain in exile. That means dispersed and non-sovereign. Jews should be anywhere in the world and non-sovereign, especially not in the Holy Land, because that is a messianic thing. Look, why did the Zionists pick Palestine more than Uganda? It's because that was it was a marketing ploy. Interestingly enough, the religious Zionist Jews, when the Uganda plan came up, voted for Uganda. Rabbi Reines of the Mizrahi religious Zionist organization movement, he voted for Uganda because said, all we need is a safe place. Why does it have to be Palestine? But the Zionists wanted to create strong Jews. They hated what they called the Golus Jews. And I could give you a whole lecture on this itself. Everybody right. from the olden day Zionists, from guys like Jabotinsky to Benjamin Netanyahu, when he said at the end of Obama's administration, when the UN declared the settlements illegal and we abstained, everybody else voted against, we abstained. So Netanyahu made some provocative comments and people told him that you're going to start a war. And his answer was, it was all over the papers. Enough with this exile mentality. People don't, the exile mentality, if you Google that, you will find Zionists. It's a funny thing. Netanyahu said that if you consider the settlements illegal, you are guilty of an exile mentality. Exile mentality means Jews like me who want peace. We don't want wars. We don't wage wars. We live in peace wherever we are. We don't want to conquer anybody. We don't want any of that. And we never did. Zionists had to be the opposite. They looked at us as weak and cowardly. Unmanly was a word that they often used. And they created a new type of Jew. And they called it a new Jew, the new Hebrew man. That literally, they said literally, it's an overcorrection for the Golus Jew. So if you want to know what a Jew would do in a certain instance, look at what a Zionist would do. And the Jew would do the opposite. If you want to know the personality of a Jew, look at the personality of a Zionist, and the personality of a Jew is the opposite. These are not my words. Vladimir Jabotinsky made a eulogy on Theodor Herzl, who died in 1904. And he said that Herzl is such a great Zionist because he's the exact opposite of a Jid. He used the then derogatory slur.
Slur, yeah, right, yeah.
For Jew. Right, yeah. He says, Jid is ugly. He was handsome. A Jid is scared. He's courageous. And he said that if you want to know what a Zionist is, take every characteristic of a Jew, imagine its diametrical opposite, and that's a Zionist. He used to call them Hebrews. That's what they called themselves. It's not me saying that. He gave me the idea. I never would have thought of this. It's the exact opposite, except for Jabotinsky. They wanted to create people fierce, or in Jabotinsky's own words, in the Beitar anthem. Listen to this. Here's how it goes. There's a Beitar anthem, and you can get this on YouTube, even in English, if you put on Beitar anthem. Beitar. Beitar was his youth group. Jabotinsky's youth group. Extremely militant, fascist even. The song started off like this. Beitar, Beitar. Migov rikavon va'afar, from a pit of decay and dust, that means people like me. Bedamu bayeza, with blood and sweat, yukam lanu geza, a new race will arise to us. Gaon, proud. Nadiv, donating, giving. Dachzor, and cruel. That's what they wanted to create, a new race of Jews. Through blood and sweat, they will create a new race of Jews. A race, that's what it means. Geza means a race. Gaon, proud. Nadiv Achzor. Now, the truth is, many Zionists don't know this, but I have a theory, a very good theory, as to why Jabotinsky picked these three things.
You've been listening to The Katie Halper Show. I'm your host, Katie Halper. You can hear The Katie Halper Show every Wednesday at 3 p.m. on WBAI. That's 99.5 FM or WBAI.org. That was Yaakov Shapiro, an international speaker, author, and pulpit rabbi, and the author of The Empty Wagon, Zionism's Journey from Identity Crisis to Identity Theft. This interview was recorded December 30th, 2025. As you know, WBAI Radio is listener sponsored, and your contributions keep community voices alive. During our winter fun drive, we need your help more than ever. You can donate now at buddy.wbai.org or call 1-833-WBAI-NYC. That's 1-833-922-4692. If no one answers, leave a voicemail with your name and number for a callback. You can also mail a check or money order to 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, 11217. Thanks so much for listening and see you next week.
Support for WBAI comes in part from NYC Care. Did you know that if you live in New York City, you have access to low or no-cost health care? NYC Care includes primary and preventative care, medications, mental health services, and more, regardless of your immigration status or ability to pay. For more information, to enroll or renew your NYC Care membership can be found at nyccare.nyc or at 646-692-2273. NYC Care in New York City. Healthcare is for everyone.
For WPFW News in Washington, I'm Sue Goodwin. Here are some headlines. In a heated hearing today before the House Judiciary Committee, Attorney General Pam Bondi traded insults with Democrats over the performance of the Justice Department under her direction. She used part of her opening statements to criticize Democrats who did not support President Trump's immigration crackdown, blaming them for, quote, avoidable clashes on the streets, close quote. When asked to answer to how the Department of Justice is handling the release of the Epstein files, Bondi refused to apologize to survivors of the convicted sex offender who were present for her testimony. And when Representative Jamie Raskin accused the Department of Justice of prioritizing political interests over full transparency, she accused Representative Raskin of being a, quote, washed-up loser lawyer, close quote. In more news, around 200 protesters gathered near the Stonewall National Monument yesterday afternoon to demonstrate against the Trump administration's removal on Monday of a large pride flag from the historic site. The Stonewall Inn is a Manhattan gay bar where the 1969 Stonewall Uprising occurred in response to a police raid. Former President Barack Obama designated the site as a national monument in 2016. The flagpole is located in a small park across from the inn that is managed by the National Park Service, which said the flag was removed to align with the Trump administration's guidance to limit the types of flags displayed within the park system. Senator Chuck Schumer said the flag removal, quote, is a deeply outrageous action that must be reversed now, close quote. City leaders vowed to re-raise the flag tomorrow, which means what happens next is a standoff with the Trump administration. And in more news, Israeli President Netanyahu has left the White House following a 2.5-hour meeting focused largely on Iran, and with no, as Netanyahu pushes for regime change in Iran. WPFW's Noah Portner has this report.
Netanyahu's visit was reportedly moved up amid developments in U.S.-Iran nuclear negotiations. Netanyahu is pressing Trump to take a tougher line, including restrictions not only on uranium enrichment, but also on Iran's ballistic missile program and its support for regional groups like Hamas. Iranian officials have warned against outside pressure on nuclear talks and insist that Iran and the U.S. can find common ground. President Trump voided the last nuclear agreement with Iran in 2018, insisting that he could make a better deal. It is now 8 years later. The president now hopes to use the threat of force to speed up negotiations, threatening to deploy yet another aircraft carrier fleet near Iran. In Gaza, Israeli fire continues as Netanyahu